Hello and welcome to the Underwater Technology Podcast from SUT, the Society for Underwater Technology. My name is Steve Hall, I'm the CEO, and each week we're bringing you interviews with our members, friends and guests from across the global underwater technology community. Podcast 17, 9th of July 2020, we've got one of the real characters from our broad community this week. This is Judith Patton, MBE. She's been championing the offshore sector and in recent years marine renewable energy for quite a while. She's got some wonderful stories to tell, and I think you're going to enjoy listening to her. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the SUT Underwater Technology Podcast. And my guest this week is Judith Patton, who is somebody I've enjoyed working with, you know, since I've been involved with SUT and before that with IMRS and others. So over to you, Judith. Can you tell us a little bit about who you are and, you know, where you come from and how you ended up in our weird and wonderful industry?
Good heavens, I hope you're sitting comfortably and have a very long time. Who am I? I'm Judith Patton, and I'm at heart a PR woman. I started off when I was 10 wanting to be England's greatest woman farmer, but gave that up at 15. My school told me my Latin wasn't good enough. So I then got involved with PR because my mother was a very well-known at that time cookery writer and television personality. And as soon as I mentioned I'm not going to be a farmer any longer, she said, you'd be ideal for public relations and let me help you. Good God, my feet never touched the ground. It was assumed that I would be involved purely with, quote, women's interest things. So I had to learn about cooking, I had to learn about fashion, all manner of things that those that know me probably are a bit amazed by. I even did a modelling course. It was only a fortnight. I learned to drag my coat along the ground. Not a lot of that is needed, really. And it was thanks to going into PR that I became somebody that could bounce from client to client and learn a little bit about a lot. And indeed, find something that I really enjoyed, like mad. I first of all joined a very solemn PR consultancy staffed largely by gentlemen who'd been information officers in the armed forces. Right. And there was a flippity-gibbet of a girl who I think I was quite hard work. But then when I moved on to a huge advertising agency with a PR division, it was fun. It was in the 60s. Your skirt rose higher and higher by the day. It was a tremendous period. And it's kind of funny because I look back on that and think of my involvement, first of all, with Oceanology International, thanks to Spearhead Exhibitions. It's not first of all with Oceanology International. I'm moving on too fast. I got involved with Offshore Europe in 1975, looking after PR for the show. A tremendous thing to work on for a quarter of a century. And suddenly, I thought I'd lost the buzz and excitement that there had been in advertising agencies in the 60s. But there we were in 75 with oil new to us, exciting for us. I watched young people sit at the feet of George Williams, who had been the exploration manager in Nigeria, who discovered oil in Nigeria. And these young men, like disciples round a living God, saying, tell us again, George, the story. Was it really the last bit of drilling you were going to do? And I thought, wow, this is really exciting. And so it's proved from 75 onwards, quite frankly, Steve.
Yeah, it's an amazing community, isn't it? And it's small enough that it is a family.
Yes.
You know, even now, after all these years, so many of us know one another, and it is one of the real pleasures of working here,
isn't
it?
It's a joy. Back in I think it was around 77, I was asked by David Stott to do some research. He had a magazine at the time, Offshore Services Magazine, with Bob Barton as the editor. asked me to do some research into how many people were employed by the exploration companies in Aberdeen. At that point, and there were people going, shall we count the man that comes in to cut the grass, and shall we do this, that, and the other? They all together managed to add up to 1,200 in the operating companies. Within a couple of years, Shell had 1,200, BP had 1,200. It was so, so exciting to see it just grow and grow. And when you got on a plane, you got on a plane with friends. If you didn't kiss half the passengers on the plane, it seemed really odd, quite frankly. Yes, even kissing them at, you know, for the pink eye flight in the morning was a bit odd, I guess. But a super, super community. I felt so lucky to be involved, I must say.
Sorry, I was just going to say, were there many women, Judith, quite very few then?
This is the lovely thing, because I was largely going to Aberdeen to look after visitor promotion. And so I would obviously write or phone people. It was before there was email, of course, to ask, you know, I'm coming up between X and Y. Could we fix a meeting? Oh, Judith, call me from the airport. And so everybody seemed to say that. They were so busy, you know, and so you stood with your money going into a coin box. And I only had to get as far as hello. And the voice at the other end would say, hello, Judith. And you'd say, how do you know it's me? Well, A, you've got a very distinctive voice, but B, you're probably the only woman that's called me in the last month, apart from my wife. No, it was exciting. It was fun. And you got such a response. It really was tremendous. I mean, it was odd because you would remember that you'd maybe not gone to that particular industrial estate for maybe 6 weeks. But you knew, you'd picked up your hire car, you knew it was the last building in that road, and it was green. And you went down to the end of the road. There was no green building there. And then you drove back, and you realized just how much had been built in that six weeks in that particular road. Quite, quite extraordinary.
Mm. And were you always UK-based, Judith, or did you move around a lot in that period?
Well, there were shows in offshore Europe almost as the mothership, but there were shows in Latin America, in Brazil, and that one moved to Venezuela. I was sort of lease lent to ONS for two shows to work with the press officer there, and had to correct the then British minister, and I think it was Alec Buchanan Smith, who said, oh, glad to see you running the press office here. And I went, no, Minister, I am not. I'm number two. Because it very definitely was a Norwegian press office, but I was there to work with the international press. And then there were, from 1994 through to 2005, 11 years of going out each year to Baku, to the show in Azerbaijan.
Yes, it's a wonderful place, excitement. Isn't it? Yeah, I went there for the first time in January to run a jointly run an SUT subsea awareness course. And I loved Azerbaijan, but everybody was telling me how much it had changed, and it would have been the complete Wild West had I been there not that many years ago.
Oh, it changed year by year, because I only went once a year. And it was like seeing a child or an old person that you hadn't seen for a year. There were such dramatic changes. I mean, just the very first time in 1994, people sort of sat outside buildings with things to sell. There didn't appear to be any what we would regard as proper shops. And then by the next year, you could go down the stairs and into a little shop. By, I think, the third year, maybe, there was a shop that they called a supermarket, and I heard an American voice saying, can you tell me where the bacon is? And I thought, oh, don't be so silly, this is Azerbaijan. And he said, yes, it's in the freezer, madam. And you thought, wow, this is quite extraordinary. And then you saw petrol stations open up. It was the things that you saw open up that made you wonder where they were before. You know, where did people get their petrol? Yes. And then you saw a bikini in a window. Not that I needed a bikini, but we'd gone to great lengths to say, you know, this is at heart a Muslim country. Therefore, we must be sensibly dressed. And to see a bikini in a shop window was quite extraordinary. It was just exciting year on year to see how much that country changed.
That's right. And how did you get involved with SUT?
Well, thanks to David Stott buying Oceanology International. I got him to send me an email this morning confirming when all of this happened, because I knew I'd get the dates wrong. He bought it, or Spearhead Exhibitions that he ran, bought it in 82. So the very first show was in 84. So great excitement being involved with that.
Okay, and that would be Brighton at that time.
That was in Brighton, yes. And super to see that growing and growing. Those days in Brighton were fantastic. And I had the great privilege to work on it from that time until the end of the last century, when I switched over to renewables and all energy. By that time, David had just retired, and so my last show would have been 2000, I think. Isn't it terrible? All the dates sort of fade in one's mind, and as soon as you open your mouth and say that, you think, oh, was it? Yes, I'm pretty sure it was. But a tremendous joy to work on it.
Yes, was that the last Brighton or the first London one?
Well, I'm thinking it's the last Brighton one.
Yes,
I might be wrong. So let's just leave it, Steve, that we both think that the last Brighton show was around that time.
Yes, indeed. And so certainly in all these intervening years down at Excel, I think many of us look back fondly on the Brighton era as the probably Oceanology at its best.
It was the joy of going into any restaurant or bar, not that I went from bar to bar, in the evening, and everywhere you went, the OI family was indeed there. But of course, the time came when you couldn't actually put anything else into the area that was available to us. And the show had to grow up and move to Excel. I was quite glad to wave goodbye to it at that moment. I wasn't sure that I could quite cope with the new style of it, although I was asked by Reed Exhibitions to handle PR for it from there was a gap for a while. And then I was writing the news bulletins and got involved with handling PR for it. But in the end, I said, hang on, old age has taken over. All energy is getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and I've really got to decide what I'm going to work on. So it was goodbye to OI at that time.
Okay, so tell me about All Energy. How did that come about? Because I always think of that as your show in many ways.
I always think of it as my third child, and I get very possessive about it and try to make it behave well and do all those sort of things. It came about almost by accident. At the end of the 90s, I knew that David Stott was going to retire at the end of 1999. And I felt that I hadn't learned as much as I wanted to about him and his business. I'd always been an outside consultant, PR and marketing consultant to the various events. And I said to him at the airport, crack of dawn one morning when we were flying up to Aberdeen, I've got something really serious I want to talk to you about. And he went, oh, not at this time. I said, look, if I don't do it now, I'm never going to do it. I want to shut down my PR company. I want to join you for your last 18 months as your PR and marketing director and really soak up all that I can about how to run exhibitions. And he, what? And he out came a hand and he said, done. And I said, oh, blimey. He said, now can I have some peace? And I said, no, you can't, because we need to talk about money. And he went, oh, for heaven's sake. No, I said, we've got to do the whole thing, because I've got to make my team redundant. And I've also got to make my clients redundant. And so we arrived at this decision, and I had an amazing 18 months working alongside him and soaking stuff up. We both had a hankering about running something on renewable energy. He had a belief that things were at the sort of point where it was going to start becoming commercial, and as if it's becoming commercial, it needed a really good show to represent it and to give a platform for suppliers and indeed for buyers. But we got nowhere, really. He ran a very democratic board, and somebody on the board said, call me a Luddite, but I see no future for that sort of stuff. So we behaved like good children and sort of calmed down a bit. He'd gone, and I had to phone the economic development unit in Aberdeen to, I was writing the Offshore Europe brochure. And I said, come on, I'd like a quote from the oil and gas capital. And the person I was speaking to, Rita Stephen, said, Judith, we're no longer that. And I thought, my God, who's stolen it? You know, I must march with a banner. You know, Lowestoft, Great Yarmouth, what are they talking about? She said, no, no, no. We are now the energy city. And I said, why? And it was when the barrel price had been very low, and people were really worried about jobs. And she said, well, it's the jobs, it's everything else. We've got to look wider. And I said, hang on, Rita. Does that include renewables? Yes, it does. So I put down the phone and I phoned David, who was on a golf course, I assumed, because I got no answer, and left him a message saying, I found where we're going to run our show. And he phoned me back and said, what show? And I said, oh, for heaven's sake, our renewables show. And he said, where? And I said, you're not going to believe this. We're heading back to Aberdeen. And so we both got really caught up with the whole thing. I talked to Jeremy Cresswell, who was responsible for forming the Aberdeen Renewable Energy Group alongside the local council to get his feel for it. And David found himself at a dinner promising the Lord Provost that he would run an exhibition. So we both jumped in with both feet and we had enormous fun. There were just the two of us organising the first one. I delighted in naming myself Top Sales Totty. Well, I was the only person who sold any space, so that was fair enough. I found myself organising a conference, looking after marketing, looking after PR. The only thing that I couldn't do was actually anything to do with the floor plan. The marvellous man who did work for us on that was stupid enough to go away on holiday. When he came back, I'd expanded the floor plan. And he said, could you keep your hands off that in future? Because you've left no room for any aisles. So I have never got involved with operational matters since. But it was tremendous fun. And the very first show, if we could have bottled the sense of busyness, buzziness, and enthusiasm there, we could have made millions from selling bottles of it. You know, have a quick sniff of this. That'll really get you going. It just has been such an exciting 20 years of being involved with that. Round about this time in 2000 was when the SUT comes back in again. You know, it's not sort of goodbye SUT, I'm not working on OI any longer, because we went to a rather academic renewables event held in Brighton. Back we go to Brighton as well, where I grew up. Anyway, so back we went to Brighton, and we'd been at the show for not very long, and we suddenly saw a familiar face. It was Ian Gillett.
Oh, good man.
Yeah. So, hello, Ian, what are you doing here? Well, I'm thinking that we SUT ought to run a conference on marine renewables. No, we're here because we're thinking of running an exhibition and a conference. And at that point, we saw All Energy. It wasn't called that then. It had a terribly long title, like Creating an All Energy Future. We had several several titles, and I can't remember whether Creating was the first one or not, but everybody referred to it as All Energy, so we called it that in the end. So we went and had a cup of coffee, and at that point, All Energy was destined to be wet and windy, bearing in mind the comment from Aberdeen about jobs. We thought, who actually would we serve best in Aberdeen? Well, from the point of view of exhibitors, it would be companies that want to get into this new industry. From the point of view of buyers, well, tell you what, let's make it for big projects. And the big projects appeared to be wind, and the exciting projects that were developing were the ocean-based ones. There was Wave, which was already being talked about. No talk then of tidal at all. And there were two turbines off the Northumberland coast at Blyth, and that was the start of offshore wind in this country. Let's go for wet and windy, and we're totally to do with ocean-based renewables. And it wasn't until show number two where an exhibitor called me over and said, you're not being fair to us. And I said, come on, you've got a super stand. You've talked in the conference. What else do you want? And he said, where is pyrolysis? And a very large question mark has shot up above my head as I said, what is pyrolysis? And I explained, we're wet and windy. And he said, no. He gave me a very long lecture on pyrolysis, and I couldn't possibly repeat it because I can't remember a lot of what he said. But he said, no. Let the market decide what you are. And that indeed has been extraordinarily beneficial for the show. And it's been a delight to see how it shifts and changes according to the flavor of the year almost. But in that conversation with Ian, we just went off and had a cup of coffee. And we agreed, hang on, we're going to be wet and windy, so all the wet stuff, we'll need your help on the conference. So it was linking with SUT, who've been the learned society patron ever since then, and what a marriage made in heaven.
Indeed, yeah, and it's a great pleasure going up there. Of course, our listeners will be aware that, you know, everything's had to be postponed or, you know, set back by months or in some instances even a year or more. So when are we hoping to have all energy underway this year, Judith?
Well, we hope it's third time lucky. It's traditionally our first show was held rather stupidly in a February. We had deep snow, but even so, 350 people came. Wow. And this year, and of course the show has now moved. It moved in 2015 to Glasgow from Aberdeen.
Yes.
Traditionally we're mid-May. Well, mid-May got postponed until September, and just recently we have moved it now to the 4th and 5th of November, but filling in the meantime with quartets of webinars, which are tremendous fun to organise. I know you're having great fun organising your podcasts. I'm having a whale of a time organising webinars. It's smashing.
And where do people find out more about them, Judith, if they want to tune in?
On the All Energy website, www.all-energy.co.uk. Can't miss them.
Brilliant. And you're also a very active member of SUT's Marine Renewable Energy Committee. Can you tell our listeners just a little bit about that?
Yes. I was invited to join when it started. Gosh, I was walking around the house going, I'm going to be a member of a learned society committee. And there was much laughing in the family. What, you're learned? They'd be daft. Anyway, we did indeed meet as a very small group to begin with. And it's fascinating because it's a real sort of opening of hearts and opening of minds each meeting, each quarterly meeting, we have somebody who might be on the committee, but somebody external who comes to talk about a particular aspect of marine renewable energies. It's interesting that the committee has an S on the end of energies. So we not only talk about tidal, which of course, from that, those early days when it wasn't even thought about, I remember very largely thanks to dear Ian Bryden, sadly no longer with us, who talked in the conference about tidal, or wanted to, and so I called a whole session, The Dark Horse, and he laughed and said, I don't know what Judith's up to calling this The Dark Horse, it's going to be very important, and sure enough, it is. We talk about tidal, we talk about wave, we're increasingly talking about floating offshore wind, which is extraordinarily exciting. Only this morning I was reading that they're looking off the coast of Oregon at possibilities for floating offshore wind. And as a committee, we run through all these various things, feeding in what's happening in different trade associations, different learned bodies, and all, regardless of how new or ancient we are to the industry, learn more all the time. What more could one want to do?
It's brilliant, isn't it? There's so much happening now, whether it be, the well-established ones like offshore wind, the things that are happening with Mayjen off the north of Scotland. We're just at the beginning to see a revolution in offshore hydrogen as well. And
yes,
at some point, and that's going to be huge one day, I think.
That is so exciting. I'm sorry, I sound like a small child all the time. It's like Christmas time. There are new presents opening up the whole time in this amazing, amazing world.
It is. It's great. And to any young people listening in on this, wondering about, what kind of thing they want to do in their career, how they want to make a difference, believe me, things like offshore hydrogen is going to be a boom industry in this century. It's going to give us, clean, sustainable energy with no problems over energy security. And I can really see it effectively replacing much of what we saw in oil and traditional gases in the past.
Yes, when we think of the extraordinary transition that is happening, as we're speaking now, we've gone 60 days without using coal to produce. Mm. I mean, who would have thought of that? There were periods in past years when we'd gone a whole week. Oh my goodness me, we've done 2 weeks. But now, when I last checked this morning, it was something like 60 days and 9 hours.
It's fantastic, isn't it?
But to have hydrogen coming along, that is, you are so right. That is so exciting, Steve.
Brilliant.
And as for young people, join the industry, give to the industry, whatever talents you've got, they're needed. For heaven's sake, head that way.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's been fantastic talking to you, Judith. Can I, one sneaky last question, if I may, before I stop. Ooh. You are, of course, Judith Patton, MBE. So what was the MBE for?
For services to renewable energy.
And oh, excellent.
It was incredibly exciting. I had always said that in the unlikely possibility in my working life, if such a thing was offered to me, I would say, certainly not, I'm just doing my job. And I remember only too well when the envelope plopped through my letterbox on, I think, an April morning when I was supposed to be driving to Sussex for an old school friend's 50th wedding anniversary. I opened this envelope and I thought, somebody's fooling. That can't be. And I rushed the yes, please back with indecent speed. But the really exciting thing was going to Windsor Castle, which is where the investiture was, and meeting the Queen and having a lovely conversation with her about hydro at her hydro system at Windsor, because it's one of those moments when a courtier whispers a couple of words in her ear and she goes, renewable energy. And you could just say, yes, Your Majesty, and try to remember to keep saying Your Majesty and ma'am. And in my case, not calling her darling, because as everybody knows, I am a bit inclined to call everybody
yes,
darling.
Yes, Judith is well known for that, yes.
and to have this conversation where I found my mouth, not surprisingly, opening before my brain properly engaged and saying, yes, ma'am, the exhibition and conference represent really large installations like offshore wind, right down to smaller ones like run-of-river hydro, and I believe you have hydro here at Windsor, thinking, oh, blimey, what did you just say? Has she not? And she then said, yes, and it's very extraordinary. It doesn't work when it's raining. And so we had a conversation about how we go down to have a look at it when it's raining, but the one at Balmoral is going very well. And on we chatted, and finally, the hand came out and I was on my way. And my son, when I've met up with my son, daughter-in-law, then partner and stepdaughter, saying, what on earth were you doing? You know, everybody else just curtsied or bowed, had a few words with the Queen, but you and the Queen were sort of chatting and waving your arms around. What? You know, why can't she behave like everybody else? And I explained it was all to do with her Archimedes screw, which he was in no way scientific at all and was totally mystified and really requested that in future I behave properly. But it was a very exciting occasion. And of course, I'm equally proud that in the same year, I became a fellow of the Society for Underwater Technology. So big thanks for that. I've got the tie, I've got the certificate, and I had a nice little engraved mirror as well. So I shall continue to try and help the SUT in any way that I can, Steve.
Fantastic. Well, it's been a pleasure speaking to you this morning, Judith. And, I hope that people listen and realize you don't have to be an engineer. You don't have to be a technologist to still make a really significant difference to this wonderful broad family.
You don't have to be, but I'm coming back in my next life as an engineer. I've got my place booked. I long to be an engineer.
Marvellous. Well said. Thank you very much, Judith.
Thank you, Steve. Bye for now. Bye-bye.
I hope you enjoyed that. It was terrific fun interviewing Judith. She's one of the real characters in our community. Find out more about SUT at sut.org. Contact me as steve.hall@sut.org. My thanks to Emily Boddy for composing and performing the SUT Underwater Technology Podcast theme music and creating the artwork. Please don't forget to rate, review and subscribe to the podcast. Tell all your friends about it. And please get in touch with me if you'd like to be featured in a future episode. Thanks for now. Speak to you again next week.